Grammar Girl Mignon Fogarty, of podcast and Twitter fame, returns to the show today with two new reference books, Grammar Girl's 101 Misused Words You'll Never Confuse Again, and Grammar Girl's 101 Words Every High School Graduate Needs to Know. Welcome back to the show, Mignon.
Hi, Ann. Thanks for having me back.
To our listeners, do you have a tip for using the right word at the right time? Give us a call and share those tips with us now, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Of course, you're always welcome to call and converse with Mignon about any questions or comments you have. Mignon, first, what's the magic in 101?
More than 100. It's one extra. And then it's funny, people always have already pointed out that 101 misused words you'll never confuse again is actually word pairs. So you're getting 202 words for the price of 101.
Wow. Keen observation. Is when it comes to the 101 misused words, are those strictly homonyms?
Many, many of them are homonyms. And because people are so confused because the words sound the same and then they're not sure which spelling to use. So, you know, we have shoot and shoot and flare spelled two different ways and, lightning spelled with and without an E. Probably, I would say at least two-thirds of the commonly misused words are homonyms.
Usually if I see the word, I know what the meaning is of the word. Is everybody are they confused even with spelling?
Yeah, you'd be amazed, and you see it a lot in the press. People will sometimes say, oh, gosh, well, people know the difference between those words. But, remember that flight attendant who popped the hatch and grabbed a six-pack of beer and slid down the...
How could some we forget?
I forget his name, but some of the news reports said he slid down a chute, and they spelled it S-H-O-O-T instead of C-H-U-T-E. So, you know, even the media gets confused and prints it wrong, and you actually see homonyms used incorrectly in news stories pretty often. So, you know, sometimes people will look at these word pairs and say, oh, everyone knows those, but, you know, actually they don't. You know, I'm sure most people would pick up the book and know half or maybe two-thirds of the words, but I would be surprised if anyone picked up the book and knew every word in here.
How much do you think spell check contributes to the problem?
Oh, it is. You know, I'm always surprised how much people rely on spell check. I get email messages from people who they'll say, I'm pretty sure it's spelled this way, but, you know, spell check keeps telling me I have it wrong, and so I must be wrong. They don't trust themselves. Mm-hmm. They actually trust spell check more than they trust themselves. And I find that surprising because their computer programs, they're great for highlighting things that you should double check, but you should certainly never rely on spell check.
I think one of the biggest dangers is having the auto check, where it automatically fixes, you know, the words, and you don't even have to worry about it, but of course you should be.
It's a big problem with the iPhone.
Are so funny.
Yeah, there are websites now that show the autocomplete will get you in trouble.
A lot of funny ones. I spent a little too much time looking at that one time. To our listeners, do you have tips for using the right word at the right time? Give us a call and share those tips with us now, 614-292-8513. My guest is Mignon Fogarty, better known as Grammar Girl. She has two new books out, 101 Words Every High School Graduate Needs to Know, and 101 Misused Words You'll Never Confuse Again. You use a lot of popular culture as references in your books, and we decided to get the sound for some of those. You use pop culture references in 101 Misused Words You'll Never Confuse Again. And in this case, it's a classic scene from the 1983 holiday movie A Christmas Story, in which young Ralphie tries to convince his parents and teachers that a Red Ryder BB gun really is the perfect Christmas gift.
Oh, no. You'll shoot your eye out? My mother must have gotten a Miss Shields. There could be no other explanation.
You'll shoot your eye out! You'll shoot your eye out!
And that, of course, goes to your point about shoot versus shoot.
Right, and shoot is interesting because S-H-O-O-T, because it's a very old word going back to Old English or Anglo-Saxon.
S-H-O-O-T is?
Yeah, and a lot of the words we use that are that speak to sort of the fundamentals of life, like hunting and eating and building a home and things like that, do go back to Anglo-Saxon because they're words that we've been using in English for so long because they're so fundamental, whereas some of the more modern words, like shoot, C-H-U-T-E, comes from an old French word. It made its way into English later. It means to fall, to have a controlled fall, and that's not quite as fundamental to life as, you know, shooting game. So a lot of the basic words come from Old English, and then English absorbed newer words that, you know, have to do with sort of more peripheral things of life from other languages.
That's interesting because C-H-U-T-E is now a noun.
Right, it is, yeah. It was a verb, and now, you know, it's a noun. Words, you know, people will complain about verbification of nouns becoming verbs. That really bothers a lot of people, but it happens very commonly. Like a modern example is microwave. You know, it was a machine first. You bought a microwave, and then a few years later, we started talking about microwaving food. That's a noun that became a verb that I don't think bothers anyone today. But, you know, when a new word is becoming verbified, as people say, then...
Is that a word, verbified?
I think so. I'll go so far as to say it is.
We have another reference. Of all the words we misuse and confuse, it seems like determining when to use bad versus badly is a struggle many have. You use an example from the movie Gone with the Wind in a scene between Clark Gable, playing Rhett Butler, of course, and Scarlett, played by Vivian Leigh.
Open your eyes and look at me. No, I don't think I will kiss you. Although you need kissing badly. That's what's wrong with you. You should be kissed and often, and by someone who knows how.
Oh, and I suppose you think you are the proper person.
I might be, if the right moment ever came.
Scarlett needed kissing badly. She did not need it bad. So, of course, Rhett Butler pronounced it properly.
Right, of course. Well, yeah, so I am, you know, when I was thinking about how to organize the book, I was trying to think about how to make it fun. And people sometimes ask, why should they care about these words and getting them right? So I wanted to show, you know, explain not only how to use the words, but show that every single one of these words is used in popular culture. You know, you will encounter all of these words in movies or newspapers, and it's not just some esoteric thing that you need to learn for learning's sake. It really, these words are common and they surround you, and it is important to get them right. And by having examples, you know, from Gone with the Wind and The Christmas Story, I think it makes it more fun and interesting to just read the examples and see how they're used.
Did you have to narrow it down to 101 examples, or did you have to work to find that many?
No, I started with about 300 or 400 of the most common things that people ask about, the most common words that people ask me about, and I had to narrow them down. And, you know, there was some arbitrariness that I wanted to. I know someone will correct us.
I question myself after having shows with you. I've never used the word badly or bad since the last show we had. I'm so scared.
Well, you know, I wanted to make sure we had words evenly distributed through the dictionary. So there, you know, every letter is represented. But it was, the hardest part was narrowing it down. And I cheated a little bit because at the end there's a chart with honorable mentions that has about 15 more words that I just couldn't give up on. Like weather versus weather, whether the heat wave you're having right now and weather as in whether or not. That was one that didn't make it into the full book, but is in the chart in the back.
You know, toe and toe, that was one that used to get me, the whole toe the line thing. And I think you finally explained it to me. I knew that it was one way, but I wasn't sure why it was. And that's right before weather in the honorable mention category. So what's the difference between toe and toe?
Well, toe the line has to do with getting your toe on the line, like a starting line. You can think of someone lining up for a race and getting their toe right on the line. I think the reason people are confused is maybe because of sailing, that, you know, you use a line, lines on a sailboat, and you might tow a boat by a line. But that's not the origin of the phrase. It's about lining up for a race and getting your toe on that line.
We have an email from Alex, a little bit off the topic, but interesting nonetheless. Quiz question, he says, what's practical about a practical joke? You don't tell a practical joke. It requires a practitioner, someone to perform the joke.
Oh, that's a good point. And, you know, so many words have different meanings, you know, practical, joke. Yeah, I don't know. You know, the one I was thinking about earlier was grow the economy because, you know, we have so much talk about the economy right now. And sometimes people will object to the phrase grow the economy because, you know, you can't grow something abstract like the economy. You grow plants. But if you go look, you know, you think about it, you can grow a friendship can grow. You know, lots of abstract things grow. So sometimes people will get hung up on the most common use of a word or the most literal use of a word when there can be, you know, other metaphorical meanings.
So we don't really know about practical, but Alex, if you do, email us and tell us the answer to that question. Killing us.
Yeah.
Email from Tom in Waverly. He says, I've always been confused by the use of toward or towards in a sentence like, the planets moved toward or towards an alignment. Is there a rule when you use toward versus towards, or is one correct? I seem to see the words used interchangeably. Is that correct, that either form can be used?
It's actually a difference between British and American English. So toward is the standard American term, but in Britain they will say towards. So I always think that in America we like shortcuts. You know, we eat our dinner in our cars. We go through the drive-through, and so we like shortcuts. So somehow along the way, we lopped the S off that word. It's the same for backward. So backward is the tip. I think there's a rare exception, but backward is typically what you use in American English, but they'll say backwards in Britain.
One of my one of the ones that trips me up, and I thought for sure you would have it in your book, is, but you didn't, is faint and faint. F-E-I-N-T and F-A-I-N-T.
You know what? Nobody has ever asked me that.
Oh my gosh.
It's funny. You know, I've been doing this for almost, I think, 5 years now, and every third or fourth day, someone will ask me a question that I've still never heard before. It's amazing. So, you know, faint, F-A-I-N-T, is to pass out, and faint, I think, is F-E-I-N-T.
F-E-I-N-T, right.
Yeah, that would be something you do in fencing, for example, right?
In boxing, I think. You move out of the way of the weapon, I think. I'm not sure. I don't know.
That sounds right to me.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that's right.
Okay. My guest.
But I can't tell you the origin.
Yeah, okay. My guest is Mignon Fogarty. You know her as the Grammar Girl. We're talking about 101 Misused Words You'll Never Confuse Again. That's her new book. Another new one, 101 Words Every High School Graduate Needs to Know. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This is 89.7 NPR News. Thanks for joining us for All Sides with Ann Fisher. And on Friday, December 9th at 5 p.m., WOSU will no longer broadcast on 820 a.m. Tune to 89.7 FM to hear your favorite shows like Morning Edition and All Sides. And be sure to listen to 89.7 NPR News after next Friday, December 9th. Mostly sunny skies today, a high near 44 degrees. Clear skies tonight and a low of 28. Mostly sunny for Saturday with a high near 50. A few clouds Saturday night, not quite as cold, a low of 39. And then expect some rain for Sunday, a high of 52. It's 34 degrees in downtown Columbus at 10:20. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We're talking about words today with Grammar Girl Mignon Fogarty. You also have a book called 101 Words Every High School Graduate Needs to Know. So how did you come up with those?
That one was harder because, you know, I don't get questions specifically from high school students saying, what words should I know? So I did a lot of brainstorming with my editor and talking to some teachers. And again, you know, we tried, in this instance, we tried to span different disciplines like politics and science and literature, you know, words that related to things that students would learn in school, but that they also would use once they went on in their life. So one thing I was very careful about with these words is making sure that they really were used in, you know, news stories or, you know, not so much movies and songs and things like that as the other book, but that they were used in practical life, that students would encounter these words. So, you know, for example, fallacy, you know, that's a lie or a commonly believed untruth. And it's sort of a, you know, it's not a basic word like eat or sleep. It's a little more esoteric than that. But it is, you'll see it in news stories a lot or in literature or things like that. So there was a lot of effort that went into finding just the right level of word that would be useful but not so simple that everyone would know them.
And the quotations that you use are, you know, by people like Nietzsche and Roosevelt, you know, Machiavelli,
right.
Of course, also, Gene Shepard voicing the adult Ralphie in the movie A Christmas Story.
And also business executives, you know, the David Ogilvy, the British advertising executive, talking about jargon. You know, jargon is another word, and he talked about jargon in advertising. So, you know, things you might read in business. You know, whether you go on to college or work or whatever after high school, these are words you will encounter.
Pat in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you. Mm-hmm. Big question about the use and how to tell the difference between the accept that begins with the A and the accept that begins with the E. I know that both of them can, you know, be nouns or verbs or thereabouts or whatever. So if you have a little trick to help remember, a little device that we could use, and then on a secondary thing, we moved my 91, soon-to-be-year-old mother to Columbus here, and although she did not go to college, she did raise 8 sons, and she is just driven nuts by the use of the word at the end of a sentence, and she says they do it on television here. The news people do it. So what can you tell us about...
You like when they say where she's at?
Where, yeah.
Okay, okay. I had to think for that second. Okay.
Right. And she's right. It's on TV. There was a popular cell phone TV commercial a few years that I often show when I'm giving talks where all they said over and over again is, where you at? Where you at? And it was, you know, 30 seconds of that over and over being drilled into people's heads. It was frustrating to anyone who loves language. And it is a misconception that you can never end a sentence with a preposition. There are phrasal verbs that include prepositions. So, oh gosh, you know, if you say it's so hot, I feel like I'm going to throw up. You know, you've ended the sentence with, a lot of people will think, with the preposition up, but it's actually part of a phrasal verb, throw up, and it's fine. But when you can leave the preposition off and it doesn't change the meaning of the sentence, then you should leave it off. And where are you at is the same as where are you. So you can leave off the at and it doesn't change the meaning, so you should leave it off. It's just unnecessary at the end. So, your mother is, I understand exactly why she's annoyed by that. And with accept versus accept, so, you know, accept with an A, A-C-C-E-P-T is, you know, to approve of something, to allow it to, you know, you accept someone into your group, you allow them to join your group. Accept is more about exclusion. You know, we like all desserts except fudgesicles, you know, E-X-C-E-P-T. So that X you can think of as pushing out, and the X, you know, maybe think, this is just off the top of my head, but think of the word exit that also starts with E-X. So you accept something, you push it out through the exit. And I want to add one thing. I did look up practical during the break, and I think a practical joke is called a practical joke because it has to do with taking an action. So one meaning of practical is to take an action. Oh. And so a practical joke is something you do instead of something you just tell.
Oh, okay. Thanks. Thank you to Pat for that call. And Robert says he knows what F-E-I-N-T means. Welcome to the show, Robert.
Hi there. Yeah, I heard you speaking about feint, and I just wanted to clarify that it is a fencing term. It comes from the French. I did fencing in college, and I also study martial arts. And anytime you try to fool your opponent by making one move and then switching into another, that's a feint. If you, like, say in boxing, if you look like you're going to throw a left and instead you throw a right, that's a feint.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Thank you, Robert.
Okay, sure. Bye-bye.
I live in Reno, and we had a fencing convention in town a few weeks ago, and I was wondering how difficult it was for those people to get their equipment through security.
Very good point. Maybe they had to ship it over in advance or something.
Yeah.
Good point. Justin in Westerville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi, Justin.
How are you doing?
Good, thank you.
Hey, I have something a bit more of a, using the wrong word or misspelling a word, but I work as a personal trainer, and a good majority of the times, people speak about one of their major fitness goals as looking to lose weight, L-O-O-S-E, versus lose, and I think that's kind of humorous. I don't know if you ever run into inadvertent misspellings, but that's very, very common in the industry, and I'll take my call here.
Thanks, Justin. That's interesting.
It is. It's a very common misspelling. Probably one of the top 10. It's up there with your misspelled. And I don't know why people get confused about that one, because they do loose and lose. They sound different. They're not exact homonyms. So I always think of the phrase loose as a goose, because goose is spelled with two O's, just like loose.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can remember how to spell goose, you can remember how to spell loose.
But you wonder if they're misinterpreting the usage of the word.
I don't think so. I think it's a spelling error.
Okay. Okay.
I think people just get confused about the spelling and lose. I guess you can think, so you want to lose weight, that has one less letter than loose. So you want to be thin, and it's the thinner word.
614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guest is the Grammar Girl, Mignon Fogarty. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. And Bill in Mount Gilead, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Hi.
Hello?
Yep,
Hi.
You're there, Bill. Hi.
Hello?
Hi, Bill. You're on the air.
Okay. My question is the common usage to accomplish a task, they're going to try and do it. Try and repair the mower, or try and climb a tree, as opposed to what seems more correct to me, try to. But I rarely, if ever, hear anyone except me use try to.
Yeah, and, you know, it's actually one of my pet peeves, too. Try to is the right way to say it. And, you know, when people say, I'm going to try and come to your party this week, you know, you're saying you're going to do two things. You're going to try, and you're going to come to the party. It's you know, the and really makes it that you're talking about two things. And when you say you're going to try to come to the party, that preposition to connects the trying to the act of going to the party. So, but I don't know why. You're right that, you know, 80% of the time you're going to hear people say, we'll try and come to the party. And I don't know where it went wrong. I don't know how it got off the rails. But it is probably the more common term these days.
Bill, thank you for your call. We appreciate it. Yeah, the your and your is probably my pet peeve.
You see it so often in comments on the internet.
Yes, and it's just rampant now.
I don't know why. The contraction for you are has an apostrophe. It's Y-O-U apostrophe R-E, and your, the possessive, is Y-O-U-R, but people don't seem to be able to get it right, and you know, especially on forums and YouTube comments and things like that, is just rampantly wrong. So, you know, it's hard for me to know how to help people with that, because it seems so obvious. I just, you know, when it comes to things like that, I suspect people are just being careless. I can't bring myself to believe they don't actually know, that if you gave them a quiz, I think they'd get it right. I just think that they're being careless when they're typing so quickly in such informal situations.
Karen in Delaware, you're on the air now. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Actually, I have two questions. Let me go with the first one that I was thinking about prior to my first question, and that was the word wrought iron. So many people go rod, R-O-D, instead of R, or instead of W-R-O-U-G-H-T. Is it not when you're talking about wrought iron starting with a W?
Yes, you're right. I that's not in the book. I covered it in my email newsletter a while ago. You know, and I think because...
Is it that common?
Well, you don't use it very often, and that's why it's not in the
okay.
book.
But,
dating myself.
No, it's just, you know, you don't have a lot of occasions to talk about wrought iron. You know, maybe if you're a homeowner buying a fence, but it just doesn't come up all that often. So,
yeah, I had to correct my daughter real quickly about that one.
Yeah,
well, my other question was about your name, Mignon. There's the word minion. Where did your name come from, your first name?
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I was named after a flower called the mignonette. It's a family name, and it's a little white flower ground cover that apparently smells very sweet. And so, you know, my great-great-grandmother named her daughter Mignonette, and then over the years it got shortened and pronounced differently, and it became Mignon.
Thank you very much for that call, Karen. We appreciate it. 614-292-8513 if you have a question or comment for Mignon Fogarty, the Grammar Girl. Welcome to the show, Kevin in Columbus. You're on the air.
Yes, my question is about the expression all told. And usually the way I see it in written form is all told, T-O-L-D. But I think I've also seen it, and I think a correct usage of it may be all told, T-O-L-E-D, as in all counted. Do you have any knowledge about that?
I don't. I've never encountered that question before. I'll see if I can look it up during the next break and find an answer.
All told, T-O-L-E-D makes more sense because really that's sort of what you're saying, all counted.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Okay,
that's
Thanks,
it.
Thanks, Kevin.
Sure.
Teresita in Newark, I mean, you have a pet peeve. Share it with us.
My pet peeve is when people say drowning, like there's a D at the end, rather than drowning. And I've heard it from people that I work with. I've heard it on commercials. And I don't even know where the word drowning came from.
Yeah, that's a good point. I wonder if it's a regional thing. There are, you know, regional pronunciations and differences. Have you noticed that the people who say it, you know, come from a certain area?
No, because I've lived throughout the United States, and I've heard it from everywhere, everyone. And even, like, on radio commercials, you would just expect better grammar on radio commercials.
Right.
And
well,
the pressure. Yeah.
You will notice a difference between national and local commercials. Local commercials are much more likely to make errors. You know, people will send me examples of, you know, their hometown restaurant that has something just egregious in one of their commercials. So, you know, there isn't as much quality control in the local commercials as there are in the national commercials. Not to say that national commercials get it right. They definitely don't, but often. But.
Thanks, Teresita.
I did look up, so it is all told, T-O-L-D. The caller was right that it would make sense if it were told and then counted, but in my dictionary says the idiom is all told, T-O-L-D. So.
Okay. I liked his idea, though.
I know.
It was interesting to me.
You know what, linguists call that folk etymology. It's, you know, people will get in their mind that a phrase or a word came about from a certain meaning, but there's actually no proof to back it up. But it makes so much sense that everyone starts believing it. They call that folk etymology.
Nancy in Gahanna, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi.
I have always had this problem. I was taught in grade school that you said she is light complexioned, but then I hear everyone say she is light complected. And I thought that sounded awful. But about 10 years ago, I looked in a dictionary and complected was in there. Oh, I think that's bad.
Yeah, it's amazing. I'm surprised how often people don't look things up in the dictionary. So, kudos to you for taking the time to look it up when you were curious. You know, so often people will come up to me and they'll say, I have wondered about this for 10 years, and it's something they could have looked up. So, dictionaries are amazing. And, what a lot of people don't know is that there's a big difference between a pocket dictionary that you can get for $5 at the grocery store and, a collegiate dictionary that you get at your bookstore. You'll pay more for the collegiate dictionary, but it has these amazing things called usage notes that, describe things that are controversial, or they'll explain, commonly misused, commonly confused words. There's more to a good dictionary than just a definition.
Thanks to Nancy and Gahanna, and Will, you're our last call before we take a break. Welcome to the show. Hi, Will.
Hey, can I ask two?
All right, quickly.
I hear a lot of people on TV and stuff say, between he and I, and I always thought it should be between him and me, which is correct.
You're right. It should be me. The more common thing that people hear is that people will say between you and me, and there have been some popular songs that sing that as they have that as part of the lyrics, and it's wrong. It should be between. It should always be between you and I. No, I'm saying it completely backwards. I'm so sorry. It should be it should be between you and me, because between is a preposition, and object pronouns always follow prepositions. So between you and me, or between him and me, would be the correct way of saying it. There have been songs that say between you and I, and those are completely wrong.
Hey, the other one real quick is, how are you feeling? I'm feeling good. I'm feeling well. You say I'm feeling well, it sort of sounds like you're not feeling sick, but I don't think I'm feeling good, correct. What's the story on that one?
Actually, it is. Feeling well is so feel is a kind of verb called a linking verb. So it can mean to touch things, or it can mean sort of your general emotional state. So to say you feel good is fine. Some people will object to it. They'll think it's wrong, but it's fine because feel is a linking verb.
If you say
you feel well.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, good is something like, you're a good person. Can you feel
right,
good?
Usually we reserve good to describe nouns, like a good person. And we use well to describe verbs. He swims well. But because feel is one of these weird linking verbs, you can say you feel good or you feel well. It's like an easier example to see is smell. So, if you say, I smell good, that means you smell pleasant. You have a nice odor.
Mm-hmm.
But if you say, I smell well, then you're saying your nose is working. You're able to sniff. So in smell and feel, there are a few verbs like that are tricky because they can go both ways.
Thank you to Will for your call. My guest is Mignon Fogarty. You know her as Grammar Girl. We're going to be right back and continue our conversation about misused words and words every high school graduate needs to know. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Last week on Car Talk, we demonstrated our usual sensitivity to callers with serious car problems.
Why were you messing around? The thing was running perfectly all right. You already told us you were getting like 97 miles to the gallon, but no. You had to go change the plugs, the rotor, and the cap. Oh, it must have really needed them. It was only getting 97 miles to the gallon.
Don't miss the fun this week.
Join us for Car Talk.
And Car Talk is tomorrow at noon on 89.7 NPR News. Join us in 20 minutes at 11 o'clock for All Sides Weekend and a discussion of the best food and restaurants in Central Ohio. That's All Sides Weekend from 11 till noon.
Support for 89.7 comes from Columbus College of Art and Design, where the spring semester of Saturday morning art classes for children and youth begins February 4th. Information and online registration are available at www.ccad.edu.
34 degrees in downtown Columbus, a few clouds and some sunshine today, a high of 44. Clear skies tonight, a low of 28 degrees. Mostly sunny for Saturday, a nice day with a high of 50. Partly cloudy for Saturday night and a low of 39. Unfortunately, some rain expected on Sunday, a high of 52. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is 89.7 NPR News.
We're talking about words, misused words, misspelled words, with Grammar Girl, Mignon Fogarty. She has two new books out, Grammar Girl's 101 Words Every High School Graduate Needs to Know, and also Grammar Girl's 101 Misused Words You'll Never Confuse. Again, we have a related Facebook comment from Lisa, and then Alan in Clintonville. I think you'll want to talk to us about this too. Lisa writes, spell check is the number one cause of misused apostrophes. I've been wishing Bill Gates would make his people learn to pluralize for 15 years now. And Alan from Clintonville, is that what you're talking about?
That's what I'm talking about. Okay. The use of the apostrophe for a plural rather than possessive.
Yeah.
Drives me nuts.
Yeah, excuse me. One thing I noticed that spell check gets wrong, and it makes people doubt themselves, if you say children's books. If you write, children is plural, and then if you put the apostrophe S at the end to say children's books, it spell check marks it as wrong every single time, and it makes people doubt themselves. So, you cannot rely on spell check. I view it as something that it highlights something you should double check yourself, and that's about as good as it is.
Of course, I get really annoyed with spell check because I teach theater, and we spell theater R-E. And spell check insists that it has to be ER. And, of course, that goes back to Noah Webster trying to Americanize the language and get rid of all those foul British spellings.
Exactly. Yeah, he decided we were Americans and we needed our own language to establish ourselves as a new country. And right. He just changed a bunch of spellings. I mean, it's funny. People don't realize one man just changed the way we spelled a bunch of words. And because his dictionary became popular, we spell... traveled with one L instead of two, like they do in Britain, and theater is ER instead of RE. And the interesting thing about Webster is that he actually originally held much more extreme views and wanted to change spelling even more. His first dictionary, he spelled tongue, T-U-N-G, and women, W-I-M-M-E-N, and he was mocked. He was not well accepted, and so he dialed it.
And that was before the tongue oil came in, I guess.
Right, must have been.
Yeah.
Or, yeah.
Yeah.
My other pet peeve is again, Britishisms. It's the putting commas outside the quotation marks.
Oh.
Yeah. People, it's very easy to be confused these days because, when you're reading something online, you don't know if it comes from Britain or America, or you don't notice. So if you're reading the BBC website, you'll see it done the British way, and CNN, you'll see it done the American way. But in the United States, we put periods and commas inside the closing quotation mark. So that I always say that's my U.S.-centric memory trick. It's inside the U.S., inside the quotation marks.
Alan from Clintonville, thanks for that call. Pat has something of a related call about spell check. Welcome to the show, Pat.
Hello.
Hello.
I enjoyed what I just heard you talking about spell check. My comment is that I think, I wonder how many people are relying on spell check as if it were an editor.
How many people are relying on spell check as if it's like you're not speaking into the phone, Pat.
Oh, I thought I was.
There you go. Yep.
I wonder how many people rely on spell check as if it were an editor, and we need to educate people to understand the difference between spell check and actually editing material.
Right. Yeah. I mean, a good editor does a lot more than spell check. There are some people trying to do, you know, there are some grammar programs now that you can buy as add-ons that do a better job than the spell check or grammar check that comes with Microsoft Word or some of the other programs. But even, you know, and they do. They're much better, but they're still not as good as a human editor. They're not as good as, you know, reading it yourself and looking things up and to see which word you really mean to use and things like that. They can, you know, the more advanced programs can highlight more things you should check, and they make suggestions about, you know, what the right word might be and mm-hmm. explain why. But you know, no computer program is going to be able to match a human editor.
And everybody needs an editor. May I just add that as a former editor? Thank you, Pat. For that call. And Don in Cincinnati, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hello. I was interested in a grammatical question, but also a more widespread question as well, if I could ask both of them. The grammatical question was just simply the difference between different from and other than. A lot of people say different than, which isn't correct. And other from, other than, is, I guess, is a personal, well, is a pronoun. So that's why it's than instead of from. But if you could elaborate on that a little bit, and the other question will follow if you want.
Well, the way I tell people to remember that different from is the right phrase, you know, she was different from her brother, is that different has those two F's in the middle. And so you can, you, when you look at the F's in different, let that be your mental cue to remember that the right word to use is from, which also starts with an F. So different from, and you've got all those F's together.
Don from Cincinnati, thanks for your call. I would gladly take two from everybody, but we have so many people waiting to talk to Mignon that I don't want to try to get to as many folks as possible. And John in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. Good program. Now,
thank
if
you.
Only it makes a difference. a pet peeve is the word a lot, A-L-O-T. People constantly use that in emails and in written communication. And, of course, it's not a word. But it offends me. And the other pet peeve that I'd like you maybe to comment on is the inability of people to distinguish between I and me. Everyone gets it wrong most of the time. Can't our schools do a better job with that?
I know. It's the I versus me. I mean, I believe people are confused because you use I when it's the subject of the sentence and me when it's the object, and as we were talking about before, it's between you and me because it's part of a prepositional phrase. But, you know, I think the trick that I learned in school that has always been helpful is you typically think about how you would say the sentence without the other person in it. You wouldn't say, me go to the store, so why would you say Anne and me go to the store or going to the store? You know, so if you drop the other person out of the sentence, it's usually obvious which pronoun to use, I or me, because the wrong one is going to sound very awkward. So, you know, and I know I was taught that in school. I know a lot of people are taught that in school, but for some reason, you know, when they're just speaking off the cuff, sometimes they get it wrong. So I know. I think schools try.
John, thank you for that call. He had another pet peeve, a lot versus a lot.
Oh, I know. Yeah, a lot is two words. And I, you know, tell people they can remember that by thinking, okay, a lot, you have very much of something. And so two words is more than one. So you can remember that a lot is two words because you need two words to describe so much of something. I can't remember the name of it, but there's a very funny website that has a whole cartoon about a lot being this horrible monster that they chase around. it might be hyperbole and a half, but it's been passed around the internet. It's funny. It bugs a lot of people.
I share that. Lance in Columbus, welcome to the show.
Oh, yes. Hello. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I have two pet peeve words. You know, it's constantly used even by trained people, and like, especially by teenagers who drop it in every other thought.
It is. They're verbal tics, and I'm actually guilty of the. When I listen to myself do interviews, I know I say you know a lot, and I try to keep it under control. And I'm better than I used to be, but you know, things like that are verbal tics, and people say them to stall for time, and they get used to saying them, and they don't even realize they're saying them. There, is another one, just and there's a whole book called that is about, it's been a few years since I read it, but I think it's about the history of all those kind of verbal tics. And they're in every language. Every language has them.
Thank you, Lance. Yeah, I'm always working on the thing. John in Grandview, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. A quick, quip. Well, not quip. I am troubled by et cetera versus et cetera. So many people on radio and even television now are using the X, and I'm not quite sure that that's appropriate. And the other thing is that people, if you go around and talk to people about this more frequently, and particularly younger people, if they were going to write a letter or an essay or a column in a newspaper or anything else, they would try to be reasonably precise about their letters and their grammar and putting their words together and to make a good impression. And yet when they speak, frequently that's not the case. So the same person that might try to create a good impression in writing frequently does not make a good impression in speaking. And the question is, when you go around, can you help them to understand that that is important as well?
Yeah. I'm much more sympathetic to people in who have trouble speaking because we don't get as much training in school, and you don't have time, so you don't get to go back and edit yourself when you're speaking. And the best thing that can help someone improve their speaking is just practice. Practice over and over, but most people don't have a lot of opportunities to practice speaking. So if it's something you want to improve, you need to really go out of your way to get opportunities to improve your speaking. What was the other question?
Et cetera versus ex cetera.
Oh, right. Yeah. And I hear that with, espresso versus espresso too. People seem to latch onto that hard et cetera, espresso. But if you look at how the words are spelled, it's et cetera and espresso. So I think people hear it and they get it in their mind a certain way rather than looking at the spelling and seeing how it really should be pronounced.
And Sharon in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. You have the solution to the drowning versus drowning.
And the et cetera and all those other things.
Right.
That have been commented on by other grammarians, that it simply has a more satisfying mouthfeel.
Yeah.
And
there are.
It's very common.
You're right. I'm trying to think of another example. There are words that have dropped their pronunciation over time because they're just easier to say a certain way, and it's escaping me what those words are right now.
But yeah.
True that the language will evolve in the direction of words that are easier to say. We'll drop complicated. You might drop a syllable. I don't know if this is an example of that phenomenon, but you know, we used to say beloved, and now we say beloved. The words get shorter over time, typically.
Thanks, Sharon, for that call. And Dylan, you're on tap here. Dylan at OSU, welcome to the show.
Hi, Grammar Girl. Your blog is like my Bible. I love it. My question / comment is about comma splices. And I was an editor at The Lantern, and no matter what, I would tell people they didn't understand, you know, that you have to connect two independent clauses with either a semicolon or a period, or I guess an m-dash also. So, how can you explain that to people? I forwarded them your blog and everything, but they didn't get it. And also, how strict are you if you were to quote somebody, you know, if they say two independent clauses and it flows together, then I argued that you should use a semicolon, but the advisor said to use a comma, but that would be ungrammatical. So what is your take on that?
Yeah, I would use a semicolon. I think that you need to make people's quotations grammatical. Just because they spoke in a way that the words came together quickly doesn't mean you need to change the punctuation to somehow. I completely disagree that you should make people's quotations ungrammatical to somehow try to reflect the speed at which they we're speaking. That doesn't really make a lot of sense to me. And you know, if you forwarded my articles to them, I can't think of a better way to explain it than that. So, you know, commas are tricky. You know, people think, oh, commas, they're just little and easy. They're the most common, one of the most common punctuation marks. But there are 20, 25 different rules about how to use a comma. They're incredibly complicated to learn how to use. So it takes some effort to know all the right ways to use a comma.
Thanks, Dylan, for that call. We have time for just maybe just one or two more calls. Allie in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I just have a pet peeve on pronunciation, and I hear it pretty commonly, but it's short-lived and short-lived. And it just drives me up a wall when I hear short-lived. I don't know if it's a common vernacular in this area or what, but I hear it quite frequently.
I've heard it, too. What's right, Mignon? Or what's correct?
I'm actually not sure. I remember looking it up for someone years ago. Let me see if I can find out really quick.
In the meantime, I'll say, Allie, thanks for that call. I want to tell folks that we'll put links on our website at WOSU.org/allsides to Mignon's podcasts. And you can also get her on Twitter, avid follower of her on Twitter. We'll show you the covers of her two new books, Grammar Girls 101 Misused Words You'll Never Confuse Again, and also Grammar Girls 101 Words Every High School Graduate Needs to Know. Mignon? Any luck?
It looks as if both pronunciations are correct, and lived may be preferred, but
What I thought too. It's kind of strange sounding. Again, I think it goes back to what Sharon said. Whatever rolls off the tongue easiest tends to be what you stick with. So, Mignon, thanks for joining us again.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's always fun to talk to your guests.
It's been great. That's Mignon Fogarty. You know her as Grammar Girl. And thanks to all of you out there for listening to us today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is WOSU 89.7, WOSU HD1, and WOSU 820 Columbus, and streaming online at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.